Hey, babe.
It's Aisha Christina. Nice to meet you.
This is Quality Queen Control.
What is happening?
Hello, angels. Happy Wednesday. Today we have a guest. Her name is Kira LaForgia. Super excited to have her on the podcast today because she really is going to give us an amazing discussion about how you can kind of be a boss without being, you know, the B word. What I love about her is that she really focuses on bringing that human aspect into the side of business. You know, when you have those really robotic email exchanges with people, or you don't really know how to approach a conversation because you don't want to seem too much of this, too little of that. Is this professional? Is it not? We're going to dive into all of that. Kira actually has firsthand experience with the challenges involved in managing the human side of running a business. You know, she struggled with burnout and was literally diagnosed with PTSD, which we're going to actually dive into. She realized the importance of delegating tasks and taking care of her mental health. Preaching to the choir, because you guys know one thing about me is I'm going to take a mental health break. She actually learned this lesson the hard way, and having tried to take on everything herself, which ultimately led her to experience significant stress and burnout. So it actually took a team of 6 people to effectively replace Kira and take on the responsibilities that she has been managing alone. So she's going to talk to us about hiring, onboarding, managing performance. We're going to get into burnout, mental health, you know, building a manageable and scalable business model, you know, how to stay up on ethics as it pertains to running a business. These are all things that we're going to dive into, and also just how to create a business model that centers around creativity. And if this is something that is interesting to you, definitely tune in and listen to this episode, because she has a wealth of insights and knowledge that I really feel like you guys can learn a lot from. And you guys know I'm gonna be asking all the questions because I want to know for myself, okay? How do we balance being a boss without being yeah, the B word? Without further ado, I'm going to introduce to you guys, Kira. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
Amazing. Amazing. Yes, I am very much looking forward to this conversation because there's so much value that you have. Whatever. Let's just like dive on into it. So
I do have
a series on my podcast called Who or What Was Your Yes? And I really feel like this is perfect as an episode for that, because I want to ask you, how did you get started on this journey? What was the catalyst of you realizing, okay, I want to start to integrate, you know, having that human side and adding that into business? What does that start look like for you?
Yeah, well, it's funny because when I have corporate trauma. And so starting out in corporate, which I don't regret because I did meet my husband 13 years ago. The first day of work in our training class, like the whole thing, he doesn't remember, but I know we were in the elevator together. and so I feel like, unfortunately, like with many of us, the impact was really born out of something super negative, which was that I had this like idea of what it would be like to like go to work and like put on my cute outfit and like go to my office, like sit in my cubicle and like decorate my desk and, you know, this whole thing. And then, you know, within a few months of graduating college, I was like, wow, work is just a place to be traumatized. That's wonderful. Like from the way that women were treating each other to the way that the men were treating the women to how our team even interacted with each other. And also to the way that I was brought into a job that I thought was completely different than what it was. Mm-hmm. You know, I was advertised as like my friend, of course, like first job out of college. I'm like, this is so fun. Someone referred me. I have no experience. I was a nanny for years. So it was very much like I thought I was walking into one job and then it turns out to be a sales job. And so I'm thinking I'm showing up in service to students at a for-profit university. And then I'm out there selling education and student loans, which have since been questionably, you know, taken through courts and things like that for manipulative tactics, blah, blah, blah. So it's really weird because I think that, you know, to answer your question, it's been an ongoing process to figure out like what really lit me up along the way and how I wanted to dedicate my life. But it doesn't like all of the touch points along the way were really negative. Like the path to get there, to making this realization, and then also to like finding the confidence and strength to like step into my best version of myself, learn how to delegate and be a real leader, and then learn that I love teaching others, that it was possible for them too, was all born out of like some really bad stuff that happened. And I'm not saying like, you know, there's a scale of like bad, good, whatever. But to me, it wasn't like I was affirmed through positivity along the way. Like it was like a reaction to stuff that was going on in my work life, whether it was corporate or small business, my bosses, my partnerships, like whatever the case may be. It was all just super like piling on each other and me just rejecting it. And that's kind of how I found myself here. And I think it made me a little bit more passionate about helping other people understand, because it comes from like a pretty deep well of pain, you know, at the end of the day. That sounds so dramatic. I'm like, oh my God. But like, it comes from a bad place. So I feel like I'm motivated to try to help other people not have to get there.
I love that so much, because honestly, I can tell even from your personality, it's very colorful. You have that creative side to you. What is so unique about you is that, again, you've created a business model and you have a business, I believe, Paradigm. Am I pronouncing that?
Okay. Yeah.
Paradigm. Yeah. And I find that so unique that you're bringing that human element to it, because so many times we find ourselves like, okay, did I like say this correctly in this email? Am I going to be not taken seriously because I didn't word things this way? Am I too much of this or too little of this? And I have very little experience in working corporate. I've always pictured my lives going in like multiple different ways, because I feel like I can do so many things. And for the short time, I used to work for a private health insurance company, and immediately no. Like I knew that was not for me. Like my boss at the time, I was called into the office because I was told that I was a distraction to the environment because of my perfume. And then they would kind of stare me down because I, you know, I'm very girly. I like to, you know, wear heels or whatever. And I just felt like I was shrinking. I was not in any capacity myself. I wasn't talkative, because how could I be? I was working customer service. So it was just very, very stifling for me. So, and you're scared, because I'm thinking, man, this is my first big girl job. And then I kind of felt like, the environment reminded me of high school. Your boss is the principal.
Yeah.
And it's just, there's no freedom and autonomy in the way that you actually would assume. And so, yeah, that's really, really interesting. And I love that you were also touching on how this came about from pain. And I want to take a deeper dive into that. I know you've mentioned before, when I was reading and doing research about you, that you actually had PTSD. How did that come about?
I know, it's so ridiculous. Like even now, just even comparing my experience in a work environment that was so bad to someone that might be going overseas, like to war, or, you know, having these like horrible, like people that have cancer or people that are close to people that suffer major trauma. And then to be told that not only was I diagnosed with burnout, but apparently burnout can get so bad that it formulates symptoms of PTSD. And I was officially diagnosed with PTSD only a few months after I realized the extent of my burnout. So normally there's a longer period of time and it starts to manifest in ways where you, like, you know, through a lot of therapy and stuff, I learned about where this all came from. And, you know, it always goes back to your childhood and things like that, trying to prove who you are to other people. And sort of like what you were saying, like being in an environment where you're stifled every day can cause symptoms of burnout. So the fact that you're, I think it really says something about the human experience that you're put in this place where you have to become something that isn't true to who you are. And it burns you out. And then it devolves into a serious mental health condition, PTSD, that requires medication and treatment and therapy. And this is just from like making a living. Like I'm not out here fighting fires. Like I'm literally doing operations and HR for a small business. Like I'm not trying to like overinflate like the impact or anything like that, that was like causing this. It really just, it's such a personal journey. And I think that like when we are trained as women, especially, to like go through our life to be a certain way and to be told that we're wrong, like perfume, like seriously, screw off. Like, honestly,
actually, literally. Yeah.
And so you're literally just like plugged into this life and then you have to become someone else. Like that, my whole career is just a rejection of that. Like not only from creating environments for employees to like really be themselves, but also to show companies that employees showing up as themselves in their heels, in their perfume, showing up with their full personality is a great thing for business. It's been proven time and time again that diversity and inclusion and letting people be who they are is a profitable business model over any and all other solutions that you can provide. Mm-hmm. But we're so focused on these weird numbers and making rules, and HR gets plugged into that category as the people that have to enforce it. That's mm-hmm. not our function. Our function is to make people have a place to fully show up as themselves, because that's what benefits the business. And I think there's this friction point there where, for me, that PTSD and that moment of mental health and that clarity that I got from understanding all the things I was doing wrong and how I was doing that as a disservice to my team and how I was creating more of me that was a problematic version of myself, I was like, wow, I am doing way more harm than good in this mm-hmm. leadership position. And it was through small subtleties that I learned along the way that you wouldn't expect. And I think that was really hard to admit, is to say not only like, wow, I'm weaker than I thought. I'm not, you know, this big high achiever. I'm great at all these things. I'm showing up. I have this personality. Like you said, I'm creative. I can pull from multiple sides of my brain, as many of us creators, entrepreneurs are. And so to be able to kind of look at it and be like, wow, not only is my like ability to mask all of these things hurting mm-hmm. me, but it's also hurting my team, because I'm leading them and they're learning from me and I'm teaching them to be less of who they are. And that honestly made it all worse. Yeah. That's where it all comes from, I think.
Yeah, I completely understand that, especially because I think, again, it's such a scary place to be in where you feel like you don't want to step on any toes, because the last thing you want to do is get fired. So
right.
When you don't know your rights, essentially, what you can and cannot vocalize, you are naturally going to be stifled. And mm-hmm. in addition to that, if you are someone that is high achieving, you have those type A personality traits, I am one of those people, you naturally do take on more. And then the lines are very blurry between what's too much and, no, push yourself, I can do this. And you don't realize a lot of the time until it's too late. And to your point, I have definitely experienced that myself in terms of, I guess, being a solopreneur. And I have found yeah. in short stints of me really acquiring a team, I function really well with that, with delegating tasks, things like that. I'm like, okay, now I know how I work. But in my experience too, as things have like ebbed and flowed, in terms of like money flow, things like that, I was like not able to always have a team and it got really difficult. And then that pressure came back and then all of those thoughts started to, I guess, recycle themselves all over again. So it's really yeah. important like to recognize when that happens. So once you realized that you had burnout, what did you do from there?
Well, this is a long-winded way to say this, but I'll just tell you the story of how this all manifested. So essentially, what happened was, I'm working in a small business, and over the years, I had adopted other people's jobs in order to make sure that I could make enough money to live my life, buy a house, have a wedding, have a dog, et cetera, et cetera. And I was sort of taught that in small business, you kind of get what you get and you don't get upset, kind of a thing. Like your money isn't necessarily going to grow in the same way that your opportunities would in corporate. And small business is a totally different environment. And so I just thought, well, if I just take on this whole other person's full-time job, then I'll earn more money. But it's nominal increases. Like if I'm taking on a whole other director's job, which did happen multiple times, I'm not doubling my pay. I'm getting like 10 grand a year. So, but to me, I was like, that's how I'm going to get it. I'm going to get it. And so mm-hmm. what ended up happening was that I adopted so much tasks, like so many tasks outside of my normal job duties, understood the ins and outs of every part of the business that was capable that I was capable of doing, and essentially just loaded myself up with work, all while cultivating and developing a team that I didn't delegate anything to because I was constantly trying to prove my worth to my supervisors. So it ended up being a situation where my body and my brain literally just shut down. I was getting ready to leave from my house after working out in the morning. I work in a pretty casual environment. So I was walking out the door, yoga pants, whatever. My heart just starts racing. I have a panic attack, fall on the floor, call my mom hysterically crying. My body literally would not let me go to work. Like, my phone was already blowing up. My email was blowing up, which at the time, and now I've recovered from it, but so I can see it in a different way. I was like, that's absolutely insane that was normal to me, that I was getting literally pulled from anything I was doing at any moment, 24 hours a day. And so thinking that was my responsibility. And, you know, to be fair, my bosses weren't the owners of the company were my immediate bosses. I'm running two locations, 25 employees at each location. And it's an in-person business. And there's tons of liability. We're teaching infants how to swim in a private environment in very high, affluent areas, very high maintenance clients, very famous in cases clients, and their kids, their babies that are in the water learning how to swim, all this stuff. I'm managing all the training, all the HR, all the operations, all the back-end systems, rebuilding systems, all of this stuff. And I'm taking all this pride in it, but my bosses were letting me do it. And that was, I still work there. I'm the COO of that company. Only one of those managers is still there. We have a totally different relationship than 5 years ago when this happened. It's completely flipped over. He's very supportive. It's all good. My bosses were getting divorced at the time. So not only that, I was being put in financial situations where it was very contentious. There was all kinds of weird stuff going on, which is a story for another day. But basically my body just stopped me from going to work. It was absolutely not. You're actually going to have a panic attack instead in the hallway of your house. And you're not going to be able to function. So go sit on the couch because this isn't going to happen for you. And so my mom's in psychiatry. So I called her and I was like, help. And she drove out. She's about an hour away. Xanax, got emergency appointment with my therapist. My husband was at work at the time. This was before COVID. So he was out of the house. I called my boss. I'm like, I can't do it. Can't function. My mom takes my phone away. I was getting messages from employees that were calling me names. There was people saying stuff about me in the parking lot. But the true fact of the matter is that my team, so my leads, the people that I considered to be trainers and people that reported directly to me, they found out that I needed them and they all stepped up to the point where I'm thinking this whole company is going to fall apart without me responding. And my mom's like, it doesn't matter. It's not your responsibility. It's not your company. It's going to be fine. Someone else needs to deal with it. The owner should never put you in this position in the first place. You know, mom's super protective.
Yeah.
Not giving me any, I'm not responsible for this at all, even though we know I am. It was like nothing happened. The team just stepped up. They stepped into their roles. I'd been training them for some of them for 5 years. They'd worked under me. And it was like no one was the wiser, with the exception of a few employees who had issues with me not responding to them immediately. There was not one issue. They stepped up. They took their jobs. They wanted me to be okay. They didn't bother me. They created a wall of protection around me. And it was like I had all this space and time to recover and focus and reset. And also it forced me to let them do their damn jobs. Yeah. And that's something that I say with complete and total humility, in a sense of I learned it the hard way. And so when I'm talking to solopreneurs like you or other people that have started to build a team, I'm like, it is worth it. Because not only did that happen to change the entire trajectory of my mental health, the way I look at the world, the way I started my business, the way I teach other people, but the profits for that company, as we've expanded my former role into six other positions over the last few years, have gone up 30%. So even with six people in leadership roles, the company is still expanding and growing, and it's better and better and better, because as good of a job as I was doing in plugging the holes, these six amazing developed awesome leaders are still making more money for the company, and it's still profiting on top of their salaries by 30%. So I was not right. And under no circumstance was I understand, and I forgive myself, you know, therapy talking, for thinking I had to do all this and prove myself in this way and to get where I needed to go financially. We just bought a house. I was under so much financial pressure. Mm-hmm. I understand and forgive myself for that. But those were huge mistakes that no one needs to make. No one needs to go in, start a business, make a few mistakes here and there, think they have to do every single thing themselves, and then get diagnosed with a disease, a mental health disorder that people get from going to war. No one needs to do that. If you had to summarize my entire purpose in life, it's that. So I think that in that, I don't even know if that answers your question, but I think it's really important to know that like your body is going to suffer if you don't take care of your business holistically. It's such a huge part of us and who we are. And people are such a huge component to that. Like there's no downfall for having amazing people under you helping expand and grow your business. And people are the key. And the sooner that people realize that, the more successful that our businesses will be. Sometimes we have, they, you know, they have to prove it to us by showing us that we are not actually that much that great. We do not need to, you know, be the one person. Like we are not the savior of the world. It is a job after all. Like calm down. Like, you know, like,
yeah,
it was a hard lesson.
Yeah, I absolutely. Wow. I mean, you did answer my question. I feel like this to me is just such a sensitive subject for me too, because I have definitely experienced that. Like I have been in the social media space for about 4 years now. And I, throughout all my experiences, each and every individual's is unique to them, but there have been plenty of times where I've experienced like serious burnout where I had nothing to give. I couldn't even think straight. And it was really difficult because I'm thinking, okay, I have to answer my emails. I have to film the content. I have to create the content. I script my videos as well. So it's not like I could just pop on camera and start talking. And also I like to make things research based. So that takes time. And then I'm focused on, okay, how am I going to grow or scale? And how am I going to edit my stuff on top of that? And it was just so much that I have experience in, I guess, arguably like a short time, you know, and I'm still learning along the way, because there's one thing I've noticed being in a creative space is so much is still undiscovered and not really spoken about. Like you see people on TikTok and YouTube and all these different things. You're not thinking, man, are they paying their taxes? How are they filing for that? You know what I mean? Do they have an editor that's, because it's, you also go through this phase where you feel like, I will not have an editor because that means I'm not working. And every single YouTuber creator I know goes through that phase, because I went through it myself. Dang. I remember like I would sit on content, and I'm still a work in progress. Okay. I would sit on content for months on end that I've already filmed because I hate editing so much. And I remember at the time, my editor, Jordan, he was like, Aish, I can edit your stuff for you. And I'm like, no, I will do the rough cuts first. Then I will send it to you, because did I really do my job if I just give you the whole video? Like, that's weird. You know what I mean? And I had to get over that. And that it was just a lot that I was going through. And I still do feel like, you know, it's, you have to be so intentional about the journey, because on autopilot, you can go back. And that's the tricky thing. And so I always just try and seek balance in all that I do, because to be transparent, I do find myself in these positions where I am either working too much and I'm isolating myself and I have zero interest in even stepping outside my house, and then I'm struggling to communicate with my friends, and or it's like I'm hanging out with my friends because I'm having so much fun and then I don't really want to work as much and I'm like, like, what do I do? So prioritizing self-care, what does that look like for you in your life, and how did you implement that into your workspace?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think it just like you said, you know, we're a work in progress. Like I never feel like I have it figured out, especially because I technically have three jobs and I employ people at all of them. So it feels heavy at times and it feels overwhelming at times. And I think the big thing, like I'm not a content creator, so I can't really relate to exactly what you said about like the passion that you're putting into your videos, but also like, I don't, that extra layer of like, this is you as a human person, like probably puts like just this really thick coating of protection around like what you're creating. Whereas like when I'm writing a, you know, no tolerance policy for a company or a DE&I strategy for a company that has a trans employee or something like that, it's kind of like, oh yeah, like, I mean, that has nothing to do with me. So it's like a different, it's a little bit easier to separate. So I think your struggle is very unique. But when it comes to self-care, I think that it just comes down to like, knowing that it's going to be different all the time. Like, I think that one thing I've kind of embraced lately is that there are going to be days when I want to be on my computer, plugging in my content, creating new resources, researching, reading till 8 or 9 o'clock at night. And there are going to be days when I'm like, it's 3 o'clock and my brain has stopped working. And I think learning to listen to my body and my brain and how it naturally functions has created a little bit more space for self-care, because my body is telling me what it needs and my mind is telling me what it needs, but also knowing that there's going to be time tomorrow. And so it's okay for me to just like put it away and come back to it tomorrow. And what I found, especially over the last, I would say maybe like 6 months or so, as I've like expanded into having somebody that's dedicated to being my assistant and actually helping me with little things that take up a lot of time that you don't realize. And what I've kind of realized from that is like, there is time. There's always going to be time. And the time that you spend when you're in a mindset to produce and to function and to create and to add value, we as entrepreneurs have control of that. So if some of those days are longer than others, I'm not going to allow myself to be shamed about that because the internet is telling me I need to work in one way or another. And if another day I'm like absolutely done for by 3 o'clock because I've been recording or on Zoom or, you know, doing orientations or talking about freaking state laws for hours and hours. And if I'm done, I'm done. It's fine. Mm. Like, it's just because I'm not working 8 hours doesn't mean that that 5 hours that I spent on a camera is not a full day of work. And that's been hard for me to realize, because coming from having someone else be in charge of me all the time and my time and where it goes and, you know, not really having that autonomy, it kind of just made everything else less important than the time I was spending. Whereas now I think my mindset has kind of shifted in a way that it is actually part of my job to take care of myself. And it's not about efficiency. It's not about productivity. It's about quality over quantity. And I think that also comes with every aspect of my life, like from how I shop to how I dress to the shoes I buy to the time I'm spending. Like, quality over quantity is kind of just the way that I've started to try to, I don't know. I mean, I'm still figuring it out, like I said, but like trying to justify or something like that, the way that I'm taking care of myself. Like last night, got home from I work on Wednesdays in the office and I manage my team of managers and directors, the ones that took over my job that I shouldn't have been doing by myself. And that was 5 years ago. So it's kind of fun. It's the same. Some of them have worked for me for 10 years, 8 years. Like one of them started working for me when he was 16 and now he's one of the managers of the company. It's really fun. And it's so rewarding. Best part of my life is to see these people grow. And I needed to get out of their way. But like I got home last night and we had plans later at night because we're watching the Vanderpump Rules reunion at a friend's house at 9 o'clock, which sounds so late.
Oh my gosh. But
I got home and I was like, I need to like somehow find a way to reset because my brain is running at 100. I was taking a bubble bath at 6 o'clock in the afternoon. And I know that maybe some people are going to use that as like, oh, you know, that's so lazy or that's not how you should be spending your time or must be nice or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I don't care. Like I have to take extreme measures to shut off my brain. And an entrepreneur, you probably relate to that. Like, I can't just be like, I'm done and walk out. It's like, well, I got a computer in there too. So, you know,
oh my God, yes. Yes to that. Wow. That was perfect. Yes.
And it's what makes us function better. Everybody's brain works differently. We as entrepreneurs can do 1,000 things a day when other people can maybe handle 3 and they're doing a great job. So why can't we give ourselves that grace? And I think it's just about finding those ways to like truly shut off. And sometimes it's reading. Sometimes I'm just into it. I'm like, no, I want to work on this more. I'm super into this right now. Mm-hmm. Like whatever the topic is, you mentioned you do a lot of research. I'm sure you go down rabbit holes all the time, ideas, stuff like that. When you're in that space, like go with it. Who cares? Mm-hmm. But like, if you're not, like, shut it down. Like, you're not going to be able to force yourself into that.
That's so true. Yeah.
A lesson. I'm working on it. Keep you posted. But I think we got to like maybe the secret is to find other people that are in your same place. So I know I can text one of my CEO friends or entrepreneur friends and be like, I am just like out of it today. Like, do you have time to hop on Zoom to co-work or whatever? And we just like gossip or whatever. Like, the community is so important, especially because you can't do that with your team. You shouldn't do that with your team. Like, we got to have peers that we could, like, I'm like, okay, we're exchanging phone numbers after this. We're going to call each other at our 6 o'clock bath. Like, we're going to make sure we're checking out. We have to hold each other accountable, I think, yes, to it too, when it matters. And sometimes that's just, I don't know. Are you an extrovert? Like, do you like to talk to people? Like, do you like to get out there and like,
yeah, I definitely am. I feel like I'm both though. I can be in solitude, not even care. And I can also go out and function just as well. Yeah. Like, yeah. What is that? Ambivert. Ambivert.
Yeah, I think I'm that too. And I think that part of it is like, what I was thinking is sometimes when I'm in that space where I really need to shut off, I can't just go and read a book like a true introvert, but I can call a friend and I can just be like, let's just shoot the shit or shoot the crap or whatever. Sorry. You know, or whatever. And then it really does help me shut off. Like, I think you just have to find those things. And for me, if it's in the middle of the day, oftentimes the only people that can really talk to me are the other entrepreneurs. Mm-hmm. So having that community has been like such a lifesaver in building out these relationships. And especially when you're trying to scale a business, it's like such unique challenges that we can understand.
Yes. When I tell you, I relate to every single thing you just said. I mean, first of all, yeah, being in that flow state, I would vacillate before now I'm 29 and I'm like learning so much about myself. And I said, wait a second, because 28 for me was a very transformative year. And I said to myself, okay, there are times, I'm not even going to lie, where for whatever reason, I wouldn't get into flow until like 6 p.m. I'm like dragging my day. There will be times where I'll wake up early, but I'm still not productive. And then I'll wake up late, but I'll be productive, or vice versa. It was so weird. And then you read these books. If you're not waking up at 5 a.m., you're not going to be successful. And it's like, but so I have these like notes I write myself on my mirror and things like that. And I wrote on one of them, time is just an illusion. I have the luxury, because of what I do, to take the time to do things as I need to do, as I feel I should. And being a creative, you do owe it to yourself to honor that. And it's weird. It's like this weird dichotomy when you have like type A tendencies where you sort of feel guilty for taking a break, because it's like, how dare you take a break? There are people right now, they've clocked in at this time. You don't get to do that. And then you're just living in other people's existences when that's not your reality, and you're punishing yourself based on that. And so I had to teach myself, and same work in progress as well, where I learned to flow with how I feel. To your point, yes, I cannot just turn off my brain and be like, I'm going to read. Like, yeah. And mind you, I love reading.
Me too.
But reading is for sleeping. Okay. I'm reading because I'm trying to go to sleep. I'm working. I'm trying to research something. But what really does help me, I notice, is calling a friend. Mm-hmm. Conversations, just talking. And what I love that you mentioned is getting on Zoom and like co-working together. Why did I never think about that? I actually used to work out with one of my friends on Zoom because she moved upstate. And then like now, like she got a boyfriend and like life ebbs and flows, like so much happens. So we kind of like let it fall by the wayside. But for me, I don't know why I don't think about that, because there are so many times where I work from home. So I'll go to like Starbucks or I'll go somewhere to try and just like feel the energy of like other people around me. And I love that you mentioned that, because that actually does help me get through. I don't even need to speak to you. Just seeing you on Zoom and we're just both working really just helps me, keeps me going and pushes me forward. So that is, wow. Thank you so much for that, because that is so true. I relate to that so much. So, okay. So I want to kind of switch gears and talk about building a scalable business. So you mentioned that you are now like the COO or the CFO. Is that what's it called?
Yeah. COO, operating officer. Yeah.
How did you get that position from like where you started? Because I often find that a lot of the times it's probably bigger corporations, but an issue I find that people complain about in regards to corporate is the lack of, you know, being able to move up. Mm-hmm. There's no, like, you're working. You're obviously going to put an effort to show that you're more than capable of taking on responsibility. And it seems like you're taking on more responsibility, but you're not going up. Is it because you were in a more of a smaller, you know, business environment while you were able to move up?
You know, I think this is twofold. So for me, I think it was partially because I was chasing this kind of role. So it put me in a position to learn so many different aspects of the company. Plus there were situational things that happened where somebody who maybe was in that position before wasn't anymore. The owners of the company truly rely on me for everything. They don't know how to run payroll. Like they, you know, all those and they don't want to. Like, it's not like a lack of skill. It's a lot. It's like, no, my time is spent in investments or building other locations or, you know, whatever the case may be. And I think, so there's a lot of situational things there, but in regards to like the response I would give to somebody that's trying to work their way up in a company. If you're fighting and trying to get up, moved up in the company, it's not the right company for you. Because for me, it was easy. It was easy for me to care about different parts of the business and for other people to recognize that. And if I have seen so, even friends of mine that are so capable and care so much, and the company really is missing out on not promoting them or not putting them in a position to lead others or not giving them raises or, you know, whatever the case may be, the company is absolutely missing out. That doesn't mean that it's going to change. And I think that there's a sense of justice that we're taught from a young age, especially in this country, where I've noticed in other, like in dealing with international businesses, it's not necessarily the same. So that's why I kind of threw that caveat in there. Mm-hmm. But in this country, it's very much like, there's justice. You work hard, you get where you want to go. That's not the case. There is systemic issues that stop that from happening. And that's a whole other conversation. Mm-hmm. We're trying not to build businesses that way or help other people build businesses that way, especially through the people operations lens. But when we're talking, if you have listeners that are like, I'm pushing forward. I'm doing more work. I'm showing my value. I'm showing my worth. It's going unseen. Leave, because they will not see it. And it doesn't matter what other manager gets put above you, or if you get moved to a different team or you try a different department, you are not a good fit for that company because they didn't recognize it in you early enough. Mm. And I've seen people waste years of time because they're like, well, I've already put in the time. Then it becomes a situation of, well, I've already put in the time. Like, I have to move up. On the flip side of it, I have employees that are not a good fit for leadership in my company, but have applied for it and have put themselves forward. And I'm giving feedback and I'm like, here's what you need to change. Here's how you can adapt. They hear the things they want to hear. They don't adapt and they don't move up. And I think if you work for a company that's just going to promote you because you've been there for a while anyway, mm-hmm. and they're going to sacrifice that integrity of those leadership positions, then you don't really want to be in that role. It's not going to last that long. And then all of a sudden you have all these responsibilities that you're not really a good fit for naturally.
Yeah.
So go find something else that is, like you mentioned, the flow state. Oh, love it. But if you're getting in, if you're not able to get into that flow state, even on the bigger picture of your company, where like you're loving what you're doing every day and you don't feel like you're beating your head against a wall, like there are so many other jobs out there. Like, mm-hmm. go out and get something else. Do your best at work, but mm-hmm. find something else. Try other things, experiment, you know, fit in different cultures, because you will find that ease once it's a good fit. It's not bad for the company. Like, if it's not a good fit, like it's not a good fit from mm-hmm. the boss's side. And that's not necessarily your fault either. Mm-hmm. If you ended up somewhere that isn't necessarily valuing your innate skills, it's just mm-hmm. not a fit. Right. And I think that that's where this whole anti-work rhetoric comes in, where people are like, people don't thank me for my job, blah, blah, blah. And there's victim mentality and whatever. Mm-hmm. Just leave. Do everybody a favor and leave.
Yeah.
Like, there's plenty of other companies that I can see it in my clients too. I'm like, this employee that works for this company would fit so much better over here. Like, you can just tell. But I mean, that's not my place to say. Like, we can refine the hiring processes and the culture stuff, maybe share a job description later on, mm-hmm. whatever the case may be. But like, it doesn't have to feel like that. Like, when you mm-hmm. find your right fit, what you're passionate about, where you're meant to be, what you should be doing, there should be space for you to continue to move up with ease. It shouldn't feel competitive. It shouldn't feel uphill all the time. Nothing's easy, but mm-hmm. you know, and I think that for me, it wasn't this big expression of my genius or whatever to get to this position. It's a small business. There wasn't as much competition. I was in the right place at the right time. I grabbed onto opportunities, but it never felt hard. It was always exciting. That next opportunity, taking over someone else's job, was something I was excited about. I would literally lose sleep, so excited to start my new role the next day or add in these new skills or, you know, whatever. So it doesn't have anything to do with me being amazing. I just found the place that's going to really complement my skill set. And everyone can find that. If you want to move up, not everybody wants to be a manager. So there's lots of companies out there that want people that want to move up. And that's kind of amazing to find the right fit. And then that's when you start to see like your young friends that like work in place. They're like 27 and they've worked at the same place for 5 years. And you're like, how? It's like, that's the right fit. Stick with
it. I know. Yeah, 100%. Like, I love that you're mentioning this because I feel like people have this perception, especially in the corporate world, that it has to suck, that, oh, this is just how it goes. And that's absolutely not the case. Like, you can actually enjoy what you do. And I love that you mentioned that and you bring that, you bring, you know, that revelation to people. You know, I had a friend that was working for a major corporation and they gave her all this responsibility and she was getting promoted, like, not in terms of, I guess, department wise, but she was earning more money. And then she had a manager, because I would go to her holiday parties. And then she ended up having a manager that said, listen, like, I don't really like my job here, but I want to train you so that when I leave, hopefully you can get this position. Long story short, they fire him, onboard another manager, and then keep her where she's at and then tell her, oh, no, you're so great at doing this. Like, you can just stay over here. And it's like, wait a second. Like, that does not make any sense. Like, I feel like she, I feel like something weird just happened there, because how is it that they would rather onboard someone else than trust you? And you've been here for a long time. To me, that was such a red flag of you've been like put in your place now where you're not going to be able to move up. So I'm glad that you mentioned that, because that just confirmed what I was feeling already, that clearly there's just some sort of it's not a fit, you know, and it's scary because people are thinking, what am I going to do? Start over, like all these different things. But I mean, what else are you going to do? Suffer?
Yeah.
You know, like what is your other option? And so what would you say is like in a successful, how would you describe successful company culture? What does that look like?
Yeah. I mean, I think that we're biased, but there's also a lot of research about this, that a successful company culture truly does put their people first. People, whether you have automations or systems, or, you know, you're a software company, or there's not a lot of client-facing stuff, you're not a service-based business, you're a creator, whatever. If you put your people first, then your people are going to give the best version of themselves and they're going to be excited about what they're doing. And putting your people first isn't just giving people a bunch of benefits. Sometimes it's just making sure that you have a really good job description and you are making sure that you're not misclassifying people and you're prioritizing their experience and you're making sure that you're catering your business towards working for your people instead of against it. And so I think that in every business, it is going to look different. For many of our clients who are small businesses, often solopreneurs moving into entrepreneurs that are, or entrepreneurship with teams, it is a big mindset shift. There's a lot to consider. There's a lot of compliance stuff. It's kind of our special sauce, in the sense that we're going to help you to really develop a company culture around a business model that really works for you as you're running the business. And it translates over, because culture is based on your company policies, but it's also based on the way that you are holding people accountable to your values and your vision and your mission and who you are. So for small businesses, especially run by people like us that start out as solopreneurs and then start to realize we need some extra help here and there, the way that we can build a culture is by truly centering the experience of the people, making sure that when we do bring in a team member, we're really thoughtful about the time that what they're spending time doing, what they're doing, how they're doing it, putting out a good job post that's going to really reflect what it does it look like to work for Aisha, you know, that kind of a thing, versus like something generic that you just copied off of Google and you're like, I think I need to do this because that's what everyone else is saying. Mm-hmm. That's not building a company culture. Like, that's putting a Band-Aid on a bullet hole. By all means, hire somebody to help you so that you can get your mind right to build your culture, because that first employee is going to exponentially show what your company culture looks like. And that's not just internally, but it also affects your reputation as a business owner, as a leader, as a creator, as a creative, mm-hmm. as a manager, as a podcaster, like all these different ways that we show up publicly, as a YouTuber, you know, whatever mm-hmm. the case may be. And so I think that if, when it comes down to company culture, I'm not going to ever tell someone, this is what it is. Like, we want cultures that are flexible. We want cultures that care about paid time off. None of that. Some businesses can't afford it. Hiring your first employee, you probably can't afford maternity leave for 6 months. Mm-hmm. That's not a culture. That's mm-hmm. just a perk. And so right. I think that you really have to lean into who you are as a leader, understand yourself as a leader, and be unapologetic about what it's like to work for your company. Even if you're like, it's kind of a mess, you're my first employee, I need help cleaning it up, can't wait to build a partnership with you because this is the role that I need. Here are your responsibilities, so I know I'm getting a return on my investment in you, either on time or energy, effort, creative space, white space, whatever it is, which we design, you know, very intentionally on the HR side, mm-hmm. but also like, I don't know, let's just meet once a week and talk about what's a mess. Mm-hmm. Like, you can, there are going to be people that are going to be like, hell yeah, I can't wait to come in there and help Aisha build this business from the ground up, set mm-hmm. up the culture. You know, I can't wait to be treated fairly. I can't wait to understand what my job is every day, and also to work in a little bit of a mess until we mm-hmm. can clean it up together. Mm-hmm. There are also going to be people that are going to read your job post and be like, oh, hell no. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. I want to just go to my husband. Never. He would be like, absolutely not. He actually tells me all the time, I don't want to work for you. I don't care what happens. I don't care. You know, there's this trend of like retiring your partner or whatever. He's like, I have my own job. I have my own life. But he does. He clocks in. He does his job. He clocks out. He goes to the gym. Mm-hmm. I'm like, there is no such thing as that life for me. But there are people out there that want to do what you want them to do. And mm-hmm. if you're clear about it, you're going to attract those people. And that is going to exponentially increase what your culture looks like. And it's really hard to change it once you get going. Wow. So we say, take it seriously before you even bring on that first person. And then from there, it becomes, like you said, your culture kind of has a flow, like it just happens. Yeah. And to your friend, like that culture, like, you don't want to work for a company that's going to overlook you when it's time for you to move up. You don't, maybe she was in sales or something. She's making the company a ton of money, I'm assuming. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't want to work for maybe she does. Some people would be like, yeah, I'm the cash cow. What of it? I make a lot of money. What do you got? Yeah. Other people might be like, no, I want to be seen differently. I want to develop in a different way. And yeah. they're going to lose good people at that company because they're not listening to what they need to do to help make sure that she's engaged. Mm-hmm. But that's not her responsibility. It's her boss's.
Yeah.
She can't take that responsibility onto herself. Like, she gets to show up to work and be an employee and say, this is what I need. If you need to give me this in order for me to be engaged, otherwise I'm going to leave. Like, employees get to do that. Like, I want people to feel empowered to know that they're worth something more than what some other dude says they should, you know, do at the end of the day. Yeah. So it's all about the culture. Even all those little decisions, they impact what your culture looks like. And it really is about you. So the short answer is, know yourself, lean into it, be unapologetic about it. And the long answer is all that other stuff I just said.
I love that you mentioned that, because at the end of the day, like, when I think about what you said about take it seriously before you even hire that new person, I want to say this to my audience who's listening to this. This is why you guys need to get on board with Kira. You need to check out Paradigm. I mean, seriously, because how often, this is the first time I've ever come across anyone that has been integrating a business like this. I've never in my life heard of anything like this. Take it seriously before, because I even think to myself, the irony of me having this conversation with you, because I am like obsessed with having like mentors and things. And I would always listen to people and they always say, oh, I have a mentor. And I'm like, how do I get that? And I ended up meeting this lady and she's like, Aisha, you should get a business meeting with like the Small Business Association of like my county or whatever. And I'm thinking, wait, how do I do that? And then come to find out, my old college offers one-on-one business advisement. So then that got me really curious about how to run a business and the structure and what that looks like. Mm-hmm. And what does it look like in my space? And so to have you have this company where you're literally walking people through the steps and how to run it professionally, and you're hitting on all these touch points that people don't ever consider because they feel like, oh, I'm too small. It doesn't really matter. These things don't need to be implemented. No, they absolutely do. And the sooner that you start from the beginning, you start out foundationally on the right foot and you carry those things on into when you start to really scale your business, it can only help. It will never harm you. And so I love that you bring that up, because I even find myself thinking, man, okay, let's say I hire, you know, an intern or something. Like, how do I protect myself from, because people are crazy. Let's be very honest here. There are people that
we love them, but they're crazy.
Yes, people are very crazy. I have seen so much in my short time being in this space where people will receive a service from you and then they'll like write a bad review for no reason. Like, it's just very weird things you'll experience. What protects you? What protects your employees as well? You want everything to be fair. You want everyone to love it. When people love it, they show up as their best self. And that's and it's very possible to have, you know, equilibrium in all of those things. And so, yeah, I just love that you absolutely mentioned that. And to wrap this up, I'm going to say, so when you're creating a business model and you are implementing that creativity, how can you go about building an environment that kind of fosters that innovation, that people feel comfortable to say, hey, Kira, you know, I kind of feel like I'd be better suited here. What do those conversations look like? Because I don't even know if people are having them at all.
Yeah. I mean, I think that we have them inadvertently. And let me think of like the easiest way to put this out there. I think that there are so many steps that go into having an HR strategy, having a people operation strategy. Like you said, like, I'm small, I don't need all this, blah, blah, blah. But when you build it once. So it lasts in perpetuity for your business. Even if your business fractions off and you have a sub umbrella or a media part of it, or a, you know, maybe you have a template shop, or you have a web design company somehow, or you acquire another their business, all of that cultural stuff, if you're the leader of the company and the face of the company, that bleeds into every other business venture that you do. So if when you're small, it can be really weird to think like, oh, I need this HR support, or I need to make sure I'm compliant or whatever. But truthfully, some of the biggest mistakes I've seen is that people think they're a lot smaller than they are. Being a business owner, you own a business. You're already gigantic because you have intellectual property. If you're creative, you have all kinds of ideas that you're putting out there. You have methods. You have a face. I don't know. The example that I'll give for a creative is, have you ever heard about Haley Page? She was a wedding dress designer.
No.
So not like, I don't want to like give too much wrong information, but if you can just like maybe Reddit it, because it's wild. But basically she signed a contract as an employee for a corporation designing wedding dresses, thought she got her dream job. So Haley Page Wedding Dresses got super famous. I hope that's her name. I think it's something like that. Of course, it's going to be like Jessica something, but no, I think it's Haley Page. And she basically goes through this whole process of working for this company forever. And then she decides she wants to try to do something else. When she signed on for that company creating all these dresses, they were using her name. She doesn't have the right to use her own name anymore. The company actually took that from her because she was an employee. And so she no longer owns that design company, but they still have an Instagram. They still have tens of thousands of followers. They still use wedding dress designs that she created. And she went off and had to start a new sub company where she could focus on her own creative endeavors so that she could do her own thing, so she could be an entrepreneur or whatever. That is an example of an employee being mistreated in a very severe way. Mm-hmm. But the same thing goes for employers. So as a creator, as you being the creative, you're coming up with all this stuff, putting out YouTube videos. Like, people could just have a shortcut to inside your business, inside your brain, see all your content, see all your ideas, your plans, you know, sitting in your meetings. They could easily just get a shortcut to, you said you've been doing this for about 4 years. 4 years down the road, they're doing it all the way that you're doing it tomorrow. So if you're not able to fully stand behind your company processes, policies, your HR policies, all of that stuff, protecting your intellectual property, there's some legal aspect to it too, which HR covers. And also we recommend usually an NDA or something like that. Then not only is there that like on paper standard that you're setting to protect yourself and your company and your personal brand, which is even more important for personal brands. And those are the ones that I'm like, come on, you guys. guys. You have the thing that you don't want other people to take, like, more right. so than anything else. Like, go ahead and take my vacation policy. I don't care. Like, right. you can find one on Google. It's not going to be as good, but like, go ahead and take it. It's not going to ruin my business.
Right.
But like, if somebody rips off your entire plan, your personality, your podcast title, you know, all these ideas, your episodes, blah, 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 blah. Like, you're losing your whole identity as a creator. And so we think of creators as small, super small businesses, but that one key hire in such a positive way, if you set those foundations, then you can move into the culture and you're setting that expectations, creating loyalty, creating a place where people want to show up in service to a creator. Maybe they're not a creative, but they love to be part of this energy. They love to throw ideas around. They love to be in a partnership type of vibe. Those one employee businesses can do like triple, quadruple the size of whatever you're producing on your own, even though it's just one other person, that's usually really affordable. So in a sense, we want to make sure that we're taking the legal and the on paper and the HR and the boring blah, blah, Kira knows all these laws route, but also bleed that into your culture, bleed that into your hiring, your people operation strategy, and know that a really good people strategy is going to keep your team small.
Right.
Because the more effective and efficient you are, the leaner you're going to be. Mm-hmm. And I know it's a big investment to work on getting all of this situated, but you only have to do it once.
Mm-hmm.
We've designed our business to make sure that small businesses can benefit from having a really high powered people operation strategy for a really low cost with really small. Like, you can join our membership and lean on us for advice. We've been through it all, you know, that kind of a thing for less than $200 a month. You don't need a full-time HR person, but you still have to follow the same laws as the corporations do.
Wow.
And if you don't know what those are, then that is going to kill your business. And unfortunately, we've seen it happen. Like, the fines are tens of thousands of dollars. So just as much as you go and get your contracts for any contractors you work with, if you're going to get ready to build a team, you have to make sure that you have all those things in place too, to protect yourself, protect your assets, and also make sure that you're all set up for whatever growth you decide to do. Mm-hmm. I've had clients that have started out with us in a really big scaling phase, and then they scale back a little bit, but they have the option to do that because their company policies allow them to go full-time or part-time or cut hours or lay people off without fear of legal repercussions to react to income ups and downs.
Yeah.
We can't do that safely unless we have our strategies in place.
Wow.
So it really gives you the freedom to be even more creative and to be even more free with how you're running your business. There's this weird misconception that the more structure you have on the back end of your business, the more boring it'll be. Like, you can't just like take a bath at 6 o'clock or whatever. That's not true. If all the structure is there, you can be super free to make decisions that are good for you and good for your business. And you really only have to do it once. So that's why I don't really get why people are like, hire an HR person. I'm like, why? We figured out how to set it up in 3 months and then you just have to maintain it. You know?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I see this. I personally myself am definitely going to be looking into this more on Paradigm because when I was on the website, I saw that something that really resonated with me where it said, you know, yeah, you can go hire independent contractors, but the difference is it's better to build a team, more beneficial, people that are really invested in your business and seeing it through. Other people, and I can even say in my niche, even the editing process, trying to hire an editor is exhausting because people are seeing how your process of how you film. They have to understand you on an intuitive level, and then I'm thinking, okay, if I hire one person, you know, how soon is the turnaround time? I want to make sure that I'm a priority because that's the only way this could work, you know, but I also at the same time wasn't at a point where I was able to have someone's entire livelihood be contingent on the money they're getting from me. So I just need that person to like believe in me. I'm still paying them, you know, on an as needed basis, but I would not like someone that is having a million other clients that they're working with and it's like a one-off type of thing would not ever be suitable for someone like me. So having that team is definitely worth the investment. And I actually, speaking of like having a team and like the whole finance aspect of it, like how would you go about, because I actually recently learned this, like I didn't know that you can have like interns and things like that. So it's like people are still getting, that was like the greatest advice I've ever received because I like at one point hit such like a low because I was like, oh my goodness, I don't have an editor. I wasn't able to find one. And I also felt like, how does this make sense for me financially? And so I'm like, what do I do? Like, how do I go about hiring and having a team if I can't afford to have a team? So how do you, yeah. is there a way to work around that? Or should they reach a certain level so that they can kind of like delegate those tasks to other people?
Yeah. I mean, I think that when it comes to your first hire, the process is generally like you're kind of using contractors here and there, but you're finding that there's some limitations and, or you're not getting the highest quality of work and you have to like jump onto Fiverr, or you have to do it all yourself, which slows down the whole process and usually slows down your income stream. Mm-hmm. So there is definitely some measurement of how can we guarantee that there's a return on the investment, and also making sure that we're putting the right person in the right seat for what we need at the time. Mm-hmm. And the fact of the matter is, when you're hiring an employee that you want to bring on, be part of your team, maybe grow with you, like you get to design what all of that looks like, including your budget. Whereas sometimes when we're talking about our contractors, we're not legally allowed to decide, I can pay you this much and I need this much of a turnaround time and I need this and this and this. Like that's not allowed. Like contractors, we fit into their processes. It's easy come, easy go. But if you're building a true team internally, like if we were to work together, I would be like, okay, let's talk about where all your time is going. Let's talk about what makes you money, and let's talk about how to get more activities that are making you more money without as much effort from you. And let's measure that against how much someone could cost to take some of these ideas and or take some of these things off of your plate. With an intern, the big thing is that you are going to be training and developing them. So with employees, you might be training and developing them on your brand voice. And, you know, maybe they're spending time watching your videos and looking at how you like things done and are shadowing you for a couple of days. And then they're producing the content and then they're sending it to you. You're giving feedback. Like it can be all done in a day because you get to decide when they work, how they work, all of that good stuff. Whereas with an intern, part of the reason that they're going to be cheaper and easier to hire is because, and to bring into your business is because you're going to get subpar work until they get it. So there are some businesses that think they're ready for an intern because they think that's the natural step, but really, and many times it's when you have type A and kind of entrepreneurs that are super multi-talented, maybe doing a lot of things on your own, you don't realize that you're doing multiple people's jobs. And you also don't realize that a part-time employee can cost you just a few a few hundred bucks a week.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. So yeah. Like if you can, like let's design a job that we can call in these candidates that are going to be the right balance of, I don't have to teach you that much, but when I do teach you, it'll give me 13 more hours a week based on you doing 4 hours of work. And then it's like, okay, well now I'm paying you $22 an hour, which is still way above minimum wage in many places. And they applied for it, so they knew how much the pay was. Mm-hmm. And I'm paying you less than $100 to edit this video. And it probably will over time take you less and less and less and less time. So that means you can do other things. You can help me manage my inbox. You can do PR opportunities, seek out PR opportunities for me. And most of the time, those first employees are going to be kind of a mishmash of a few different tasks and jobs. Mm-hmm. But it really does depend on how you want to show up for them and what will make you money the quickest. And I know that sounds really harsh, but we generally expect that most of our clients are going to get a return on investment for their employee, even if they don't stick around after a few months, especially for that first employee, because of how much of an impact they can make on the way that you are learning about how you want to run your business long term. Wow. So I'd be super interested to see what a job like that would look like for your business. Like we'd break it down, we'd cost effective, like make it work for you. But you don't, a lot of times you don't have, your first hire isn't going to be somebody that's relying on you for their livelihood. It's often a part-time employee. You're paying a few $100 a week, building a relationship with them. Some of those people, you're going to really want them to grow with you. Other people, it's going to be like, yeah, this is going to be part-time forever. I hope you stick around. Let's have some fun. Let's get to know each other, find new ways for you to learn. What are you interested in? Like have a true partnership there. And it's really fun to see how people don't realize that there is that secondary person for them out there. And that first hire makes such a big difference. And I think people wait way too long to do it.
Mm-hmm. I absolutely agree with you. Especially like I said in the beginning, going back to feeling like, man, if I am like outsourcing something, does that mean I'm not working hard enough? Like, what is this? Mm-hmm. What is, you know, you have this weird guilt about trying to, you know, outsource, you know, to make your life easier. And I can honestly say from experience, you know, me having a well-oiled machine, I like to say, where I'm having this person do this, this person do that, I was the most consistent when I was, you know, uploading consistently on YouTube and everything, like, because it was just so easy. I had a system and a structure set up. So like I said, like, it can only help you and not harm you. What I am very heavily invested in, because I've always had such an affinity for the structure of business, is integrating it into the creative space myself, which is why this is so interesting to me. And everything that you're like about and Paradigm, your company, really just speaks to me, because it's very important that we implement these strategies. You know, as being a YouTuber and being in the creative space, people are not business savvy. They do not have the business acumen. You are signing contracts and you're having no idea what it is that you're signing, and you don't even really have a choice. And you're, you know, you have maybe brand managers, and like, only they're dealing with these things. They drop you tomorrow. What do you have on your own? How are you going to be able to run things on your own when you've never even had to, you know, figure these things out? So yeah, that's why I'm happy my journey happened for me in the way that it did. So I just want to say huge thank you, Kira. Thank you so much for being on the show today. One last question I'm going to ask. If you had to think of a moment that was your yes moment, like, wow, I know that this is what I meant to do, like, what was that moment? Or if you don't have an answer to that question, what is a quote that you live by, a central quote of your life that you live by?
Oh my gosh. I mean, I feel like, because there's been so many like no moments, that the yeses really stick out. When it comes to career, I think that there's been a few times when things have just felt like they've been really flowing. Like, we recently we have a management course. So I'm trying to help people become certified in our way of managing other people. And it's totally different than in the corporate world working on official certifications, but we have this course coming out. Mm-hmm. And I was sitting at my computer in a hotel in LA after doing a like appearance up there. And I had blocked off a whole day to just sit in the hotel room and record this content. And I remember thinking, like, as I was explaining it to people, like, yes, I won't be available. I need to just like shut off Slack, shut off my messages, shut off everything, and just like focus on this education piece. And I started recording, and there was times when I didn't need a script. I didn't need my slides. And I knew that I was giving all this valuable information that was going to be reproduced for this course that's coming out in a few weeks. And I was like, I can't believe this is my job. Like, I'm sitting here talking about these things that I care about so much, that has affected my life in such a positive way. And I've seen the effect that it's had on other people. Like, mm-hmm. I truly can't believe that this is part of my job. Like, regardless if that course makes me $5 or $500 or whatever, mm-hmm. it doesn't matter, because my job for today is just to sit here and talk about this. And I think that was like, for me, it took a lot longer to get there than other people, because there were so many obstacles, you know, there's so many things in the way. So to be able to like decide, okay, I'm going to go talk to this amazing person on their podcast in a studio and have this whole experience, spend the night, get room service, and then the next day just talk about this thing that I care about so much, that I'm trying to change people's minds about management. Like, that's the whole point, is that it doesn't have to be this way. And I was just like, I am so damn lucky. Like, that feels like, as much as it's like not necessarily fun to like talk to yourself on camera for 8 hours in a day, it was like, I can't believe that, like, the privilege of having this opportunity and hopefully helping to reach one person, because if I can reach one person and they can change the way that they're managing other people, they might have a team of 13 people that's going to benefit from that change. And it's just mind blowing to me that we have that opportunity to do that once we build these businesses. And that's why I'm like, keep going. Like, when I have friends that are like, no, this is so hard, sales are hard, blah, 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 I'm like, you've got it. Keep going. Like, you have things that like people need to hear from you. Like, otherwise the system is just going to overtake everything and everything's going to stay the same and it's always going to suck.
Yeah, I agree. Like, people have to realize, like, you're needed. It doesn't matter. Like, think about, like, people had so many makeup lines, celebrity makeup lines. And when Rihanna came out with her like Fenty line, it was so like monumental, you know, the range, even the shade range, like how she created the products aesthetically were very different than what we were used to seeing. And so it doesn't matter. Like, there's room for everybody. It's about people aligning with you and your message and, you know, living in the fullest expression of yourself and loving what you do while also serving others. That's purpose, you know?
Yeah.
So I absolutely love that. So let us know where everyone can find you.
Yeah. Well, on Instagram, we are at The Paradigm with two M's, and I'm sure we'll link it in show notes and stuff.
Yes.
And I'm in all those DMs. Like, I know people outsource them, but I don't. So always, if you listen to this, I want to hear about it. And we have this really cool quiz and workshop coming up, which we'll make sure and share the links to, but it's all about just figuring out what is your people leader archetype. So talking about like what your personality is going to be as a leader. And even if you're not there yet, like being able to embody that and start to see how that's going to manifest in your company culture when you keep growing, or if you're a manager of other people, but you work in a corporation, you still have a culture on the team you're managing. So understanding who you are in like a more fun way and how you can kind of tackle some of those things that might make you different from other managers, but not in a negative way. Like just because you are, you know, maybe the title is the BFF boss, that doesn't mean you're a pushover. Like it just means you're going to connect in a different way. So here's a couple things to watch out for if those are your tendencies, that kind of thing. But yeah, I'd love to connect with everybody on Instagram, hear what their quiz results are, and just kind of like really talk to people. Like I know that Instagram's a numbers game and all that stuff, but like I live for the connection. So that's really what I want a voice memo from the listeners of like, what did they think? When did they think I was being a moron on this episode? Like, what did they not agree with? Like, I know I don't always like speak to everybody. So I love to hear from everyone and like really, truly connect. It's what, like when I need a break, I'm like, let me get in the DMs and like, start talking to people because I don't want to, it's technically work, right?
It is. So. It absolutely is. Yeah, I absolutely agree. So yes, do not worry, guys. You don't have to memorize any of this. All of Kira's information will be in the show notes down below. And with that being said, I will speak to you beautiful angels in my next episode.